forgot.
At the end of the horn section, we say... See you, Peter.
On stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5435. Now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Monday night. It's our early Tuesday morning for some of you. It's Tuesday afternoon here in Australia. And I'll tell you, it just keeps getting better and better over here. I was, you know, kind of off my gourd last week about the fact that John Howard got knocked out of government here. He continues to impress Mr. Kevin Rudd. Yesterday was his swearing in and the swearing in of the new Australian government. And the first thing Kevin Rudd did was go and take the Governor General, and the Governor General is the official head of state, actually, not the Prime Minister. He's the actual official head of state, and he's nominated by the Prime Minister, and he is the go-between to the Queen, because remember, we're still part of the Crown here, and it's really mostly a figurehead position. But the Governor General is the guy who swears in the new government and, you know, does these kind of things here. And so straight after Kevin Rudd, his deputy, Julia Gillard, the first ever female deputy prime minister in Australian history, and the rest of his cabinet were sworn in, Kevin Rudd, Julia Gillard, and the Governor General kind of said, excuse us for a moment, and they went off and ratified the Kyoto Protocol. And Kevin said this was going to be his first act in office, was going to show the difference between labor and the Howard government, and priority one was ratifying Kyoto. And sure enough, he went and did it. He wasted no time. Day one, goes and signs it. And I don't know if you've seen the footage, but Australia has a delegate in Bali at the moment at the UN Climate Conference. However, before signing, Australia only had observer status, which is where the United States is at the moment. You can observe, but you can't be part of the negotiations because you haven't signed on to the treaty. And the Australian representative announces to the chair that Kevin Rudd has just ratified the Kyoto Protocol, and there was this massive round of applause and smiles all around. And the conference is being led, if I understand correctly, by the Environment Minister from Indonesia. And with a big smile on his face, he said, I am so relieved. And so am I. The blogs have been a riot. There's so many people on the left who are saying, I feel slightly better about being an Australian again. And I think that this is the first step in a new dawn for the Australian nation. And I think the big factor is Kevin Rudd is going to be his own man. He is not going to be connected at the hip to the United States. And so now, it takes 90 days for the ratification to become official. However, because Kevin Rudd made this a core promise of the election campaign and he acted as soon as he had the authority to sign it, the Australian delegation will have full status even before the 90-day process is complete, because it is so important. And so this now leaves the United States as the only developed nation on this little blue marble that hasn't signed on to the Kyoto Protocol. And I think that this is going to be the beginning of a turning point. And then one of the next things on Rudd's list is to go to the United States and begin negotiations for Australian troops to be withdrawn from Iraq. Not Afghanistan, but Iraq. And again, this is another one of those signs that Kevin Rudd will be his own man and govern Australia for the interests of Australia, and actually be a true friend to the United States and do what real friends do and pull up a friend when they're doing something stupid and not just support them blindly. But with this, because I know he's really, really, really jealous at the moment, we got Gene on the line. How you going, Gene? Welcome to the program. How are you?
You dog! No, just kidding. just a couple of quick comments. I was going to say there is... somewhere that Canada really hadn't signed on with the Kyoto Accords either. So that Canada is still Kyoto. But that's...
Okay, I thought they had signed on, but
they might have signed on and then taken pain back. I don't know, something like that. But somehow, there's... like, Canada's still kind of like... there was a poll that was out just last week that say that because people think that Canada's so green and it's really not, and this is by Maclean's, which is the Canadian newspaper. So there's that. But I had to also throw this. You know who we sent for our observer for the Bali Accords?
Or the no, I can't even imagine.
Larry Craig.
You're kidding.
No, it was on Tom Hartman this morning. Apparently, Senator Craig sits on the committee that's chaired by Inhofe, the guy who doesn't believe in global warming, so we sent Larry Craig to be our observer.
You know, well, you know, I'll tell you, Gene, I really think that Australia's move with this may not change George Bush, but I think it's going to put a hell of a lot of pressure on whoever gets in next to take the plunge and actually join the world community.
I've
been living down here for 10 years and have been just, you know, had my heart torn out because I'm living in a country that seemed to not give a damn. And had this idea like the United States that, you know, as long as I'm okay and we're producing so much, we should be allowed to pollute. And this is just such a stupid line of thought. And, you know, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this develops because, again, you know, there's been pieces written that, you know, all it takes is spending, you know, 1% of your GDP on new technologies and green power and things like that over the next few years will be enough to take the steps to cut down the greenhouse emissions to significantly lower levels. But if you don't spend that 1% of GDP now, it's going to cost you so much more than that when the damage really begins to kick in.
I know. The one hope that I have is I'm hoping that the foreign business community will say, look, you have to live by our now, and as far as environmental standards, whether you like it or not, that's my hope. And that we get those Kyoto standards kind of forced on us whether we want them or not. And I hate to sound like such a Stalinist, but hey, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. What I'm just wondering is, is the American business community foolish enough to think it can stay with this old, hamstrung, worn-out, coughing, old-style technology while the rest of the world goes flying by? I mean, it makes me crazy. And
well, I think the United States could end up being left in the economical dust if they continue, because it has, you know, the modeling is there. It shows that if you begin investing in this technology now, it's going to create jobs, it's going to create new industries, it's going to save public money in huge amounts as the air cleans up and you have less public respiratory problems. You'll have less heat stroke deaths. There's so much run on, you know, good things that will come out of a little bit of hard work. And in the chat room, Twin Dad makes a joking comment saying, you know, that's redistribution of wealth, isn't it? And I can see right wingers making that argument. However, it's about investment in your future. It's, you know, we got to get past this short-sighted, you know, don't stop me while the engine's rolling. Don't make me think and don't make me care, because that's not economically viable. Actually, it is.
Yeah.
To actually give a damn and help lead the rest of the world, which is what the developed countries need to do, is to lead the underdeveloped nations with developing the technology, and then they get to make the money by exporting that technology.
Yeah. I'm going to let you get on to someone else, but I had to throw that in there because I couldn't believe we sent Larry Craig to be our ballet observer.
Do you think they just wanted to get him out of the country?
That's kind of what I think they wanted to do.
Hey, but you know, it's a bit of a bad joke. It really is,
right,
man. And I just hope that, you know, Kevin Rudd, having replaced John Howard, will, showing his independence, may shake up the United States a bit, because when it comes to especially the climate change issue and Iraq, the UK has already turned their back on the United States.
Everybody, yeah. We need to get woken. I got one last question. Do you have the restrooms of like Bali? I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, man. Take care of yourself. Thanks, buddy. That was our news ninja, Gene. And I tell you what, blow that breakout. Bugger it. and, you know, like I was saying to Bob earlier, I have been reminded what living in a democracy is like. And it wasn't just because the election came out the way I hoped it would come out. It's the fact that the system actually worked to where, after all the argument and all of the ads, all of the propaganda, on this day, the people of a nation all went out and voiced their opinion. And that opinion actually came out in the numbers. And in this situation, a time of change was called for by a huge amount. And that change has taken place. I swear, it's like, I feel like a cloud has been lifted from the place that I live. You know, John Howard did have his good points. Unfortunately, they were early on in his reign. He did do some good things. He banned gun ownership in this country, which was fairly easy to do because we don't have the gun culture like you have in the United States. So, you know, you can't get license to carry handguns and all this stuff. And the states did all kinds of gun buyback schemes and got thousands of guns off the street. So we have much less gun violence. And that was a really bold thing for him to do. And it was really good for the country. You know, Indonesia and East Timor and all that went down, even though I think he could have acted sooner before the bloodshed, after the massacres happened, Australia led the way to rebuilding and building a brand new nation, which is East Timor. Now, there are dodgy bits to it. We kind of stole the natural gas rights and some other things because we said, oh, you know, you won't be able to deal with this. But In some difficult situations, he did lead, and he did well. But then something happened. I'm not sure if it was 9/11. I'm not sure if it was a third and fourth term. But then suddenly something changed, where he felt like he had the ability to do whatever the hell he wanted, just because he was John Howard, and they now controlled both houses in the parliament. And that's where our draconian industrial relation laws came from that never were brought up in the campaign before they were passed. It was just kind of done after they got in because they had a rubber stamp Senate. So, you know, the people of this country said, you know, we've kind of had enough of this. And they not only booted Howard's government, but they booted Howard. The final result came down, I think, on Saturday, that it's official. John Howard has lost his seat. He's gone. And I read on the blogs, and aside from the real diehard Howard lovers, you have people saying, geez, I feel like I got my country back. And there are even, and you know, on the other side, there are quite a few people, not all, but quite a few, who are saying, you know, I wish this government the best of luck. They weren't who I voted for, but I hope they do a good and fair job. I think Kevin Rudd you know, could be a very good man. And he's a bit of an enigma still. We still really don't know what kind of guy he is. You know, it's because this campaign was so stage managed, and he's fairly new on the scene. He only took over the leadership of his party a year ago to the day that he was sworn in as Australia's 26th prime minister. And so, you know, Kevin Rudd, Peter Garrett, Penny Wong, who is an amazing woman, and Julia Gillard are all heading to Bali next week to take, you know, get involved in full participation in Bali. And I think it's going to be brilliant for Australia. It's going to be really great for the rest of the planet, because I do think, or I hope, that this is going to put the pressure on the United States to finally get with the program. You cannot be a world leader if you won't be part of the rest of the world. And I think it's very simple. And how you can say, well, you know, China this and India that, they're already part of it. They don't have hard targets now. They will have hard targets in round two, starting in 2012, and that will be more guaranteed if the United States signs on and gets involved. And, you know, the coal interests in West Virginia are going to go absolutely batty, but tough ticky. They're the ones that have done the damage. I feel like this country where I live, where I still don't actually have a voice yet, except for the one that I do this program with, has, you know, this nation has turned, I think, a great corner. And Twin Dad's asking me a question. This is kind of good. He says, John, the only pressure will come from the media, and what influence do you think think Australia can have on American media? Well, wow, that's an interesting question. For one part, Rupert Murdoch is an Australian, and he has been supportive of signing Kyoto. He wants to make his entire operation carbon neutral. And I think he's doing that as part of marketing strategy. But if he goes and does the right thing and actually makes it happen, I don't care. In fact, most of Murdoch's newspapers in Australia actually endorsed Kevin Rudd into this election. Now, will America notice? Damn good question. That is a damn good question. I think the administration will try and downplay it. I don't know if any of this has made the media at all yet. But I hope it will. Yeah, only if Lindsay Lohan is involved. but can it have some effect when one of America's so-called, you know, great allies ends up by action telling the United States that they're wrong on this issue and they're wrong on Iraq? Will that force this to be played in the media? And will Kevin Rudd get as much camera time when he goes to the United States as John Howard would? Because John Howard was one of Bush's little buddies. It's gonna be an interesting next 3 years, which is the term. I don't think Labor will be challenged with to be thrown out of government for at least 6 years, because John Howard's party is in complete disarray. Hey. That's kind of weird. ELO's just posting about a bit of a riot in an Aboriginal town. Eek. There's, wow. I'll have to look into that. But, you know, I couldn't be happier about the fact that Kevin did this, and I believed he was going to do it. But no one had any idea that it was going to be, you know, I've taken the oath, excuse me a minute while I go and ratify this treaty. Then we'll come back and do interviews, and you know, they had their first cabinet meeting and all that kind of, you know, ceremonial stuff. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because Australia lost its kind of king of the mountain status on solar technology due to the fact that the previous government didn't support it the way that they could have. So a lot of the technology that was being developed in Australia was actually going over to Germany, who over the last few years has put up, I think it's somewhere between 4 and 10 times the number of solar panels in Germany as they have done in Australia. And, you know, I mean, Germany, I lived there. I lived in northern Germany. In the winter, you don't get much sunlight, and they're finding it to be very viable. So, I think we're going to see more investment, you know, into these technologies in real ways. And I think a couple years, it's not going to take long, but down the track, as oil prices continue to skyrocket, which will end up increasing the demand for coal, which will make its price go up, that these sources of energy will become not just viable, but I think more, even more, you know, more profitable. It's going to be bloody fun to watch. So anyway, let's take a break here, Bob. When we come back, why don't you kind of jump in and we'll chat about what you think this, what impact you might think that this will have over there, if any. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network on a Monday night. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. We'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Fox Stop at midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at Lenny Kravitz.
The spiritual, you know, it's very important to me. It should be important to all of us, you know. It's like, especially the situation that the world is in, you know. I think it's time for people to really start to think about this whole universe and where we come from and where we're going and get involved.
So be there Thursday midnight on Fox Stop, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We want peace, we want it, yes, we want peace, we want it, yes, we want peace.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff.
Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
Now I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Nice one, Bob. Cheap Trick, one of the greatest rock and roll bands ever, and I'll tell you, I've worked them many, many, many times throughout my years, and the smaller the venue, the better the show. I've seen them in 40,000, I've seen them in front of 400, and the 400 was just one of those things that I'll never forget, and just one of the best live rock and roll bands ever. Just fantastic. So, Bob, jump in on this. I'm curious to get your impressions on, do you think that Kevin Rudd coming straight out and saying, I am my own man, the U.S. does not lead me, I am going to do what I feel is right for my nation and the rest of the world, do you think that, you know, given that he's just ratified Kyoto and made a real big statement of, you know, basically walking out after he's sworn in to go, excuse me while I go sign this, and almost, you know, next thing on his list after Bali is to begin negotiations in the United States for a withdrawal from Iraq.
John, he had to. He had to do that. He had no choice, because the reason for that is that it is becoming more and more apparent that the United States of America is no longer a part of the solution. We're a part of the problem. And so if Kevin Rudd had any kind of convictions at all, he had to make an open break with the Bush administration, and he had to make it as publicly as he possibly could.
Well, you know, I mean, the guy is nobody's fool. I mean, you know, support him or not, you know, for people in this country. But at the moment, you know, it's like almost 70% of the population do, which is, you know, overwhelming. Or, you know, it's a little over 60. You know, I think he's doing a brilliant job by saying, you know, I'm not going to kowtow and hide behind the skirt of this big superpower. I'm going to, you know, we have, you know, an economy that is a bit of the envy of the world. As the U.S. has hit a couple of real big bumps over the last few years, Australia's continued to kind of pump along.
Well, this is smaller countries' chances, John, to, like you said, get out from behind the skirt, but also to assert, you know, not some sort of old paradigm, we can blow you up military dominance, but an intellectual, spiritual form of dominance that the United States is utterly incapable of taking part in now. This is a way forward. This is, you know, this is third way material, and I think I'm guessing that Rudd has and Labor have figured that out.
Well, you know, even before Rudd took over as leader of the party, Kim Beazley was still running the party. A year ago, Labor was already outpolling the coalition, even before the change with Rudd. And then Rudd came in, and for all those people that thought that Kim Beazley didn't really have what it took to be the leader of the country, even though I think that was a misjudgment, they saw Kevin Rudd in a very, very positive light. He came out kicking. He comes across, some people say, you know, it's all a facade, and I really don't think that it is. But I'll tell you what, why don't we go to the phones, man? Alan, how you going, man? Welcome to the show.
All right, how about you, John?
Oh, I'm doing really, really good. I'm in a good mood today. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I was wondering, I heard that in Australia that you have to vote or you'll get a fine. Is that true?
Absolutely true. And I think it's actually one of the smartest things about the system here. You know, your democracy is a responsibility, and once every 3 years to have to go on a weekend to go and cast your votes, I think is completely justifiable. And if you have mandatory voting, you're going to get a much more accurate, you know, take on the people, because you're getting, you know, almost virtually a full sample of the voting, of the possible voting population. And I think if the United States took on just that one little thing, you know, not necessarily, you know, I also think preferential voting would be a wonderful thing to be introduced into the American system, because then it would make outfits like the Greens and independents much more viable, and they could become viable forces as opposed to spoilers as they can be viewed now. But, you know, the fine isn't much. If you don't vote, it's like $220 or something. You pay it, and, you know, you can get away with it. But it does give a little bit of that carrot and stick, saying, hey, you know, this is your democracy. You really need to come and, you know, have your say. And voting here is not a chore for people, even though it's more complicated than it is in the United States. It's, you know, like I said, I was telling Bob last week, it was like a celebration atmosphere on election day. You know, the Australian people get together, and it's like their day to make the decision on what direction do we want to go as a nation for the next 3 years. And in the United States, where you only get 50% of the eligible voting population to vote, it makes it very easy for there to be, you know, games played, you know, scare minorities over, you know, traffic violations and silly crap like that, and keeping them away from the polls. So it makes it very easy. And I almost would guarantee you There would be very few elections in the United States where if everyone had to vote, that we would ever end up with a Republican president.
Well, we have, do not want everybody to vote. They brag about it. They don't want certain portions of our to vote. Do you folks have a proportional representation there?
Yes, we do. Very similar to the United States, we have a House of Representatives and a Senate. And, you know, the House of Representatives is, you know, your amount of members is by population and how many districts you have. And then the Senate is, you know, a little bit more, you know, fixed voting, you know, similar to the way that there are two senators per state in the United States. Go ahead. Be losing?
I think we must have lost Alan. I'm sorry about that, John.
Oh, that's all right. You know, the fun.
I love the questions that he brings to the table, though. Mandatory voting's a lovely idea, but I was just typing into the chat room, John. I don't think it could survive constitutional scrutiny here.
What? Because it goes against freedom of speech. Your freedom not to speak is.
Yeah, your freedom of speech is your freedom of silence, and there's no greater political speech than voting.
I agree with you that it would have a really hard time, and there were people that would have that constitutional argument, but I think again we're in a situation that if explained and rolled out properly, I think a whole bunch of the American people now would probably end up going for it. The thing that you would have to fight would be the major parties would fight it tooth and nail.
Well, I mean, you want something sickening, John. They backed off on it, but the Virginia GOP, the Republican Party of the Oldie Dominion,
yeah,
they started out. They introduced a rule for Republican voters that they were going to ask voters to sign an oath upon voting in the primary, in the Republican primary. They were going to ask voters to sign an oath whereby they swore that they would vote for Republican candidates in the general election.
That should be illegal.
Well, surprisingly, they backed off on it, but only after a whole bunch of people heard about it and said, USOB, USOB.
There are
a loyalty
so
oath,
many.
I mean, my God.
Well, yeah, I mean, isn't that actually giving up your democratic choice?
Yeah, that's signing,
but,
yeah.
You know, I would think that there would be some legal argument against that, as, you know, it's almost like buying a vote. You know, if you're going to vote in the primary, it means that you must vote for the Republican candidate. That goes against free choice. And, you know, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but by the same token, that's ridiculous in the first place. Because Virginia is one of these states that has a problem because they've had these so-called open primaries where, okay, so what if you're a Democrat? Come vote in the Republican primary. So if you're a Republican, you know, what's the point in being a member of a party? You know, it's not proportional representation like what you have down there.
Well, in California, which is where I'm registered to absentee vote from, as a registered independent, I can, if I choose, vote in both the Democratic and Republican primaries.
You're kidding.
And I actually think that is fair.
Wait, are you telling me you get two votes in a primary?
It was that way the last time around, and I kind of missed out time-wise with the registration. And it's something that I need to go and chase up, because if I have that ability to do it this time, you bet I'm going to check other and, you know, nominate Mickey Mouse for the Republican candidate.
Well, let me shift gears with you back real quick to what you were asking earlier about the impact of Kevin Rudd and signing Kyoto. I wanted to make sure that we got to Alan, so you know I didn't elaborate much. But the real key there is the ability to get that, and I think it's what Twin Dad was alluding to, the ability to get it prominently into the American consciousness. Because I frankly hold out very little hope, even with a Democratic president and some form of a Democratic majority in the Senate, because, Kyoto doesn't affect, the House isn't involved. The Senate is who ratifies treaties.
Right.
And at this point in time, the American public mind has been so poisoned against Kyoto that the mere mention of it, and people go, well, they don't want that. That'd kill American industry.
Well,
there isn't any American industry left, frankly, to begin with.
Exactly, and this is where we need to get on top of the debate with this and dispel these uneducated straw man arguments. And, you know, admittedly, Kyoto is not perfect, but it was never supposed to be the be-all, end-all.
No, but
the
Republicans and the right did such a marvelous job, John, with things like, well, it'll let China just keep on polluting, and we'll be battling uphill. It's unfair. Why should they get away with it? And you and I both know the answers to all of that. You covered it very well a week or so ago. But getting and frankly, one of the problems that's involved with this is getting the attention of the of progressives and liberals on it too, because we got a war to end, we got all the stuff that we talk about all the time, and getting liberals and progressives to understand that concept that I keep harping on, that environmental issues are women's rights issues, are gender equality issues, are issues of basic decency for the poor, are labor issues, you know, that it's all samey-samey, mm-hmm. is a mighty tough sell. You know, I've had labor guys look at me and say, I don't give a damn what happens to the poor. Okay? And the Iraq war doesn't matter to me. And I've heard the same thing from feminists. And I've heard the same thing from environmentalists. You know, I'm an environmentalist. I'm working to save the planet. I don't have time to work on ending the war. I've heard every one of these things said personally to me, John.
But the war is an environmental issue.
Yes, it is.
The destruction that's going on in these areas of the world impacts our environment. Now, I don't know if you saw, but yesterday in The Independent, there was an article that scientists have actually expanded the tropic belt of the planet by 2.5 degrees, both north and south.
I saw that.
This has major ramifications.
Yes, it does. Couple that with a story that came out of the New York Times yesterday. I know we've got a listener who listens via podcast who will chime in on this. We have spent a buku bajillion dollars, like $2.5 billion or something, building this deep space infrared telescope that was to be shuttled up to the International Space Station, and it is literally going to be capable of looking back in time, if you will, at the origin of the universe. It may not go up.
The right wing Christian fundamentalists will try and block it because
there was not a word about them in the entire article, but all you have to do is read the mission goal and you know why the Bush administration doesn't want that damn thing going on the payload of a space shuttle.
See, I reckon all these religious, you know, groups are getting so fanatical in these last, you know, couple of decades because they see their own demise due to the enlightenment of science. and science is the greatest threat to them because it so disproves so much of the dogma. And you know, and this is where the Bush administration and others have done a great job in making the population ignorant again, to where they don't critically think, and so it makes it easy to poison people on things like Kyoto and climate change, and you know, it's you and I are so much on the same page with this. You know, understanding how, you know, by cutting down on polluting this planet, it's going to improve the health of people in general. I mean, you get away from even all the rising temperature stuff. By cleaning up our act, we will improve the health and welfare of the general population of this planet.
Oh, just, you know, all I have to do is drive down the mountain and about 10 more minutes, and I can be sitting next to a coal-fired power plant that would just, you know, make your hair stand on end, John. By the way, speaking of coal-fired, I've got one silly little story for you because I know it'll give you a giggle as you wrap up. I sent you an email earlier this morning saying that we were out of power because
right.
We had this humongous, and this is two years in a row. Same time last year, howling windstorm comes barreling down out of Canada. And, you know, we were out of power for 24 hours the last time. This time it was only, you know, like almost 12. So at the end of the day, there's still a little daylight left. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to juice up and do the show. An Appalachian Power Company truck comes up to just down the road from where we are. Dude gets out of the truck. The rest of the crew is watching him. He takes this really long blaze orange pole, you know, high visibility, with a little hook on the end. And he puts it up to where the wire goes onto the pole, maybe onto the transformer or whatever. And he takes that hook and he jiggles the wire. And the power came on.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The old Zenith TV fix for the power grid.
Yeah, you know, slap it and it'll work. I so want off the grid. I'd love to build an extension onto this house here, cover every available bit of roof space with solar panels, and just send. And the first thing I would do once I knew that it worked is send a letter to Appalachian Power saying, "Dear sons of bitches, goodbye."
Actually, you say, "Hey, now you can hook up one of those fancy schmancy meters." That everything that's being generated that I don't use,
you have to purchase.
Goes back to, you can buy.
Yeah, but
and,
I thought
you know,
you'd get a kick out of that.
Absolutely, you know, and I've told you before, you know, a great mate of mine, Christopher, works for one of the two major power companies in New South Wales, and you know, he builds base stations and whatnot. I mean, he deals with the grid, and I mean, he's told me some scary things that they sometimes have to do on huge days of high usage, like, you know, a super hot day where the air conditioners are all going, where they actually take a water hose and spray the heat sinks on the main transfer station out west just to keep it cool so it doesn't shut down. But I don't think anything in the grid here is as weak to you know,
I'm not kidding. My son-in-law saw it too.
I don't doubt it for a second, right?
And we're just sitting there looking at each other, going, you know, we could go get a cane pole and put a little coat hanger on the end of it and fry ourselves. It went out. The power went out about 6 o'clock this morning. Nanette's not in the chat room now. But she was earlier. It went out for her even earlier than that. You know, these are windstorms, John. You know, okay, so it's a 60-mile-an-hour gust. You know, a nut and a piece of, you know, well, I mean, what's the gauge on this wire? I mean, heavy gauge wire should be able to withstand 60 miles an hour.
And if they know that they've got something that weak or dodgy, they should be replacing the section of line.
But you know why they don't?
This, again,
they've got a profit margin to meet.
Right. This would cost money. And there's kind of a scary thing going on here at the moment. At the moment, both of the power companies here are state-owned. One is a bit of a public-private partnership, and the other one's fully state-owned. And the Labor government of New South Wales, who I can't stand because they're just so horrible, and like any government that's in power too long, they become ineffective and they become corrupt. However, their opposition is kind of so all over the place that they don't even make a viable alternative. But the premier is right now pushing for the privatization of the two power companies to get money to build infrastructure.
Well, that's not how you do it.
No, and you know, it's been proven when they sold, you know, half of the national telephone company. Yeah, it may have been used to pay off a bunch of the national debt, but you've lost all of the income stream that you used to get.
Yeah, look what you don't have anymore.
Yeah, so, you know, I hope that, because I know Kevin and the federal Labor government kind of as a whole didn't support the selling off of Telstra, the privatizing of it. The kind of sell-off thing that Howard did, and I'm hoping that Kevin, with the full plate that he's got and so many national issues that he's got to get, that he's got to jump on, I'm hoping that he will intervene into New South Wales and say, hey, guys, this is not the way to go. Yeah, we know that we need money for hospitals and transport and some other things, but you've mismanaged it so damn bad that you don't go and sell off an asset to try and make up the difference. There has to be another way to do this. And, you know, with Integral Energy, which is the outfit that my mate Christopher works for, they're a fully union outfit. They have a wonderful relationship with the union. I'm not with Integral. I'm with Energy Australia, which is the original state-owned outfit. And as you know, we pay a little extra for 100% renewable energy, you know, for this house and whatnot. We have now been here over a year, and just last night we had thunderstorms that rattled this place. I mean, rattled this place. 80 kilometer an hour winds just came up out of nowhere, and since we've lived here, the power hasn't even flickered once.
No.
Never once. And it's because these outfits are very well managed, you know.
The top dogs at the high end of the totem pole make a very nice living. They're not wanting for anything. They can probably afford to eat turkey in Australia. I saw what turkey goes for down there in that one email you sent.
That's still one of those things I haven't quite gotten over, is the sticker shock of buying a turkey in this country. But
what was that, a $70 turkey?
Yeah, and it wasn't even a big one, you know. I looked at it and I'm going, it's a big chicken, you know.
Call for it, Danny.
Yeah, I really don't understand why. And even the guys at the butcher shop who, you know, I get on with and chat with all the time, when I told them, I said, look, I said, that turkey would be cheaper than the chicken by a long shot. And they're looking at me, they're like, going, you're kidding. I'm going, yeah.
Yeah, but
wild game bird.
Yeah, so the guys at the top, they're making a comfortable living. It's not like they're part of, you know, the starving proletariat or anything. But the one thing that's involved here is you've got an essential for daily living, you know, electric power, and it is not being driven by the urge to make money for some coupon clipper who lives in an apartment overlooking the harbor.
Absolutely. And, you know, Energy Australia, you know, their kind of public relations is really, really good. Because, like you said, it isn't profit that comes first. It's the service that comes first. It's the infrastructure that comes first. And if you don't have that solid infrastructure, geez, how much of the rest of the economy that relies on electric power would lose if the electrical grid wasn't dependable?
Lots.
You know, I mean...